Good afternoon and welcome to Tuesday Talks at the White House, a weekly invitation for people around the country to engage with policy experts, administration officials, and more. In March of this year, President Obama passed the Affordable Care Act. And today, we're so pleased to have with us Nancy DeParle, the director of the White House Office of Health Reform, who's going to be answering your questions on health reform implementation. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
So for the past couple of days, you've been sending us your questions on whitehouse.gov and Facebook. If you're just joining us now, you can go to whitehouse.gov/live. There's actually a live chat that's happening where I'll be scanning your questions and we're going to answer as many of them as we can. To introduce myself, I'm Corey Shulman in the Department of New Media. We're so excited to be answering your questions today like we do every week. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Nancy Ann to give us a brief introduction and then we're going to jump right into your questions.
Great. Hi, I'm Nancy Ann DeParle and I'm Director of the White House Office of Health Reform. And I want to thank everyone for joining us today. A big part of healthcare reform was making sure that you get what you pay for when it comes to healthcare. And yesterday, we took an important step forward in that in implementing a provision of the Affordable Care Act called the medical loss ratio rule. Now, that sounds complicated, but it's really a pretty basic concept. The percent of your premium dollar that an insurance company spends on administrative costs like overhead and executive salaries compared to what it spends on actual healthcare is known as the medical loss ratio. The rule that we implemented yesterday requires all insurance companies to spend at least 80% of the dollars that you spend on healthcare premiums on your healthcare or improving the quality of your healthcare. And most importantly, it requires that this information be made public because right now you often don't know how much they're spending of your premium dollars on your actual healthcare costs. If insurance companies don't meet this new standard, they'll be required to provide you a refund or a rebate in 2012. Or to lower your premiums, and we actually think a lot of them are going to decide that they just want to lower your premiums. Our estimates indicate that about 9 million Americans could be eligible for rebates worth a total of up to $1.4 billion. And the average rebates or refunds per person are estimated at $164 in the individual market. The new rule will also encourage insurance companies to be more efficient, and we think it'll hold them responsible for limiting their administrative cost to what's absolutely necessary. And requiring insurance companies to report how they've used your premium dollars will make our healthcare system more open and transparent and make it easier for you to figure out if your premium dollars are being used well and you're getting good value for it. So it's just one of the steps we're taking, Corey, to make our healthcare system better. And I look forward to talking about it today.
Great. If you want to learn more about the medical loss ratio, if you go to whitehouse.gov, there's a White House whiteboard video. It's the newest edition in the series where Nancy Ann plainly lays out what it's all about. So I encourage you to go and check that out. We have a question that's just coming on Facebook. This is from Whistling Dixie. And the question is, if this bill is so great, why are so many exempt in opting out?
Well, there aren't so many exempt. And I don't know about so many opting out either. There are new requirements in this law to make sure that insurance companies give you the most value for your premium dollars, and also that people are allowed to keep their adult children up to age 26 in their plans until they turn 26, which is great for helping young people who need insurance out of college. There are requirements that are we call the Patient's Bill of Rights that protect people from lifetime limits on their plans, which many people have family members who've gotten sick, only to learn that they have a lifetime cap on their benefits, which doesn't work so well when you have cancer or some condition like that. So no, this is going to help millions of Americans. In fact, the rule that we put out yesterday will help some 75 million Americans make sure that they're getting better value for their premium dollars.
Okay, thank you. The next question comes from Sherry Andrews from Hendersonville, North Carolina. This is a question that came in through whitehouse.gov. Are there any safeguards to prevent the insurance companies from raising our premiums so that they're spending 80% of our care and still ranking in billions for overhead and compensation? We want them to be healthy, viable companies, but not while bankrupting their customers.
That's a very good question, Sherry, and that's what the medical loss ratio policy is all about. What Congress did was say, we want insurance companies to be healthy and viable, and we understand that they have legitimate administrative costs, but we don't want them to be making, you know, huge profits at the expense of the consumers who are paying their hard-earned dollars for premiums. So this law requires that insurance companies spend at least 80% of the premiums that you put in on your health care or on improving the quality of your health care. So that will help a lot. Secondly, another requirement in the law is requiring that insurance rate authorities around the country really review the rates that insurers submit, and that the Secretary of Health and Human Services will look at unreasonable rate increases. And these are both things that will help increase the transparency and make it more possible for you as a consumer to make sure you're getting good value.
Thanks. This question comes from Gail Maureen Ferrero, and this is in the Facebook chat. If you're just joining us, go to whitehouse.gov/live. Click the link to Facebook where we're taking your questions live. Gail asks, I'm disabled and now unemployed. How will this reform affect me?
Well, first, Gail, I would urge you to look at the new website that HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, set up in July that might give you some information that could help you with coverage. And that's called healthcare.gov. And if you go on that and put in information about your situation and where you live, it will give you the names of some plans in your area, how much they cost, what their denial rates are, lots of other information, as well as about public plans. It'll have information about private plans in your area, as well as about public plans and other assistance that you might be eligible for. So I'd urge you to do that. In 2014, when the law is fully implemented, there will be exchanges or new marketplaces that will have affordable plan choices. But for now, there are choices that are available on the website that you can look at. If you are someone who's been unable to get insurance for 6 months because of a pre-existing condition, there's a new program called the Pre-Existing Condition Insurance Plan that is available under this law as well to help you. And there are already 8,000 or 9,000 people signed up for that program who've been in the past locked out of the insurance markets. It's a more affordable option, and you might be eligible for that too. So I urge you to go on the website, healthcare.gov, and take a look.
Thanks. The next question comes from Martha Lee. Martha's in Jefferson, Ohio. Martha asks, how can you think that healthcare will be affordable when insurance industry has done nothing but raise rates since the Affordable Care Act has been passed?
Well, Martha, I know what you mean, and you do read a lot about insurance rates going up. One reason you're reading those stories is because the Affordable Care Act is making all of this information about what's happening out there in the insurance markets a lot more transparent. For example, this summer, under the Affordable Care Act, the administration gave out grants to state insurance regulators to do a better job of making this information transparent so that you'll know when an insurance company is raising rates, why they say they need to raise them, that the insurance regulatory authority can have hearings and look into it a little bit better. So that helps as well. There are cost containment measures in this bill, including the medical loss ratio policy, which will require insurance companies to spend at least 80% of your premium dollars on actual health care. So that will help, as well as the unreasonable rate review that I mentioned earlier.
Great. The next question comes from Bernice Makita in Montville, New Jersey. This came through whitehouse.gov. Bernice says, please put to rest all of the outrageous rumors and tell us exactly what we have to look forward to. Plain language, please.
I'll try my best, Bernice. So what you have to look forward to is a healthcare system that will work better for you, put more control in the hands of consumers, and give you more affordable choices. And it does that by creating these marketplaces or exchanges that will start in 2014 that will give you more affordable plan choices. And if you can't afford insurance, it will help you by giving you tax credits that will help you to afford a plan. In the meantime, there are programs like the Pre-Existing Condition Insurance Plan to help you if you have a pre-existing condition and can't afford insurance right now. There are insurance reforms that help protect you against annual, unrestricted annual limits that protect you against lifetime limits, that make sure that you have a choice of doctor in your health plan. So there's a whole array of protections for you as a consumer that are happening right now. And as we go forward to 2014, there'll be more affordable choices.
Thanks. If you're just joining us, go to whitehouse.gov/live. We're taking questions from a live chat that's happening right now on Facebook. Click the link to join the Facebook chat, and Nancy Ann is going to answer as many of your questions as we can. This next one comes from Terry Couch. Terry says, not one person has been able to identify what authority government has to force us to buy healthcare. Can you?
Well, the government, in fact, does have the authority under the Constitution to say that everybody needs to have health care, And this is something that's being litigated in the courts, as Terry, as I bet you know. But it's something that the Congress looked into fully, and under the Supremacy Clause and other clauses of the Constitution, it does have authority to ask that everybody who can afford it get health care. Right now, we all pay a hidden premium on behalf of the people who don't have health care, because when we go to the hospital, those of us who have insurance are paying an extra $1,000 on behalf of the people who don't. So this just makes the system fairer and makes it possible to ban some of the worst insurance company practices. Right now, if you have a pre-existing condition, you can be effectively locked out of the market. You can't get insurance. We can't do away with that practice until we make sure that everybody gets access to coverage, and that's what this new law will do.
Okay, this question comes from Venus McCultra. Will reform close the 2-year waiting gap period for people with a disability to get Medicare?
No, there isn't any change to Medicare, to the disability policies that I'm aware of on Medicare. But Medicare does get strengthened in a number of ways, and I'm glad that you asked this question, Venus. One thing is that if you happen to be a person who has high prescription drug costs, which millions of Medicare beneficiaries do, you may fall into this situation in Medicare called the donut hole, which is that gap in coverage between about $2,500 worth of prescription drugs and up to about $5,000, where you don't have any coverage and you're on your own. This law, the Affordable Care Act, closes that donut hole over time. And starting in January of 2011, Medicare beneficiaries will get a 50% discount on the drugs that they have to purchase if they fall into that donut hole. Also on January 1, if you need preventive service, like a colonoscopy or a mammogram, that will be covered with no cost to you as a Medicare beneficiary. These are preventive services that we know improve your life, help you stay well, and so those will be covered by the Affordable Care Act.
Thanks. This next question comes from Wayne Schuster in Ellsberg, Maryland. Does the Affordable Care Act reduce or increase annual health care costs for individuals/families and for the country compared to the costs prior to the legislation? Please explain.
Well, nonpartisan independent Congressional Budget Office, which is the official scorekeeper for Congress, studied the legislation and found that it does save money both for people in the individual market and in the small group market, saves as much as 14 to 20%, because it creates a marketplace where there really hasn't been one before, so that individuals who don't have much leverage right now can go into these exchanges and purchase insurance, and they will get lower administrative costs, which will help save them money. The same for small group. For our country as a whole, we will spend more at the beginning to get everybody covered through the tax credits and through expanding Medicaid. But on a per person basis, we will spend less in terms of the number of people covered. And over time, this law does reduce the deficit. It reduces the deficit by more than $1 trillion over the 20-year period that they looked at.
Okay, thank you. The next question comes from Manuel Robles in Atlanta, Georgia. Manuel asks, will there be a limit as to how much an insurance company can increase your rates in a year? I have a personal policy that started at $325 a month, and as of November, my premium went up to $856.75. When I called my insurance company, I was told that because of their concern regarding healthcare reform, this was their only option.
Well, and Manuel, you're one of those people, millions of Americans right now, who unfortunately sounds like you're in the individual market, where it means just what it sounds like. You're there trying on your own to get a policy that's affordable for you and covers what you need. And that's where the market has been most broken. So you're kind of at the mercy right now of insurance companies. That's changing, as I said, with the things like the medical loss ratio policy, which will require the insurance company you choose to make sure that you're getting that for your premium dollars, 80% of it's being spent on your health care, or they have to give you a refund. So things like that are changing, but right now, that's been the problem with the markets. What's going to make it better is, under the Affordable Care Act, having the exchanges and the ability for you, Manuel, to go in there and choose among a number of plans, and if you need help purchasing, you'll have help through tax credits. So that will help. There are no limits in the law per se on premium increases, although there is plenty of impetus in the law, plenty of focus on insurance authorities in Georgia and every other state looking at premium increases and making sure that they're justified. And the Secretary of Health and Human Services is looking at those too to make sure that they're reasonable.
Thank you. The next question comes from Jacqueline Everhart Thompson in Tyler, Texas. Are military pay rates to be frozen to fund the health care plan? If so, let's reduce your salary, reduce Congress's salaries, and implement a rule of 80. Service years plus age equals 80 before people are eligible for retirement benefits. We're all in this together, right? Good for everybody, right?
Well, Jacqueline, it sounds like you've thought a lot about this, but military pay rates have nothing to do with the Affordable Care Act. There's no connection between the two of them. So to answer your question, no, military pay rates are not going to be frozen to pay for the health care plan.
Okay, the next question comes from Allison Seller. Allison asks, is spending on health care defined only as claims, or can the insurance company include other costs? And if so, what may be included in spending on health care?
It sounds like Allison understands the medical loss ratio pretty well. So the medical loss ratio, as I said, is the percentage of your premium dollar that an insurance company spends on your health care, or they can spend it on a few other items that are related to your health care, such as spending on improving the quality of your health care. So things that make the health care system work better or give your physician an incentive to do a better job. Those are things that can be classified as medical care expenses, but things like administrative expenses to process claims or executive salaries and compensation, those things are not part of your health care and they can't be classified in that 80%.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, go to whitehouse.gov/live. There's a live chat happening right now on Facebook where we're taking your questions. This one just came in from Deanna Russell. Deanna asks, is there any thought of putting this type of regulation on the spending for healthcare providers on drug companies?
Well, Deanna, this regulation that we published yesterday was done with the authority and some explicit provision in the law from the Affordable Care Act. So no, we're not looking at regulations to extend it to other areas. That would be something for Congress to look at. But thanks for the question.
All right, the next one from Georgiana Mims. Will healthcare reform denial of coverage provisions cover the Medigap?
I don't believe there are any provisions in the healthcare reform law that affect Medigap, which are private plans that some Medicare beneficiaries purchase to help them pay for additional costs that are not covered by Medicare. I don't believe there are any provisions in this law that affect that.
Okay. This next question comes from Rick Spratley. Why do we have an employer-based system? My employer doesn't make any other personal buying choices for me. Having third-party paying, whether in higher education or in healthcare, allows costs to rise above inflation rates and independent of economic conditions.
Well, you'd have to go back pretty far to Rick, and it sounds like you probably know something about this, but if you went back to the period around World War II, that's when employer-based health insurance really started to grow. And in fact, that's when health insurance itself started to grow back in the 40s. Some people say that it happened because there were freezes on how much employers could pay people in terms of their wages during that time period. So employers chose to provide health insurance as a benefit to their workers. So that's one theory about why it grew. I don't know exactly why we have it, but I do know that 150 million or so Americans get their health coverage that way now. And so what the president wanted to do with the Affordable Care Act was really to focus on the parts of the market that aren't working well, the individual and small group market, where people really don't have any leverage. Small businesses today have a very difficult time purchasing coverage. It's hard for them to afford it. And he wanted to really deal with those issues as opposed to dealing, in general with the employer-based market. So we're building on the existing system.
Okay, Georgiana Mims just followed up. She said, yes, but all insurance plans will not be able to deny coverage. Is this correct?
That's right. Under the law, in the future, insurance companies can't deny coverage. It's called guaranteed issue, which means that in 2014, after we get the exchanges set up and people are all are required to have some kind of insurance companies can't deny you coverage. They can't deny it because you have a pre-existing condition. They can't deny it and say, we don't want to cover you. That'll be the change that happens then.
Okay, the next question comes from John Crane. This is in Lakewood. What are healthcare rates? Why are healthcare rates going through the roof for individuals as well as businesses? This is why employers are reducing or eliminating healthcare plans because of costs.
Well, John, some of the reason why healthcare costs are increasing just have to do with new technologies and new treatments that are available, new prescription drugs and other things that consumers want. So there's some piece of it that is called medical trend, which most experts agree is an appropriate increase that just occurs just like, you know, other prices go up. But that's a pretty small amount. It's 4 or 5% at most. So your question is very appropriate, which is, well, what about, why are we seeing 20% increases or 15% increases or more? And I would say that that's based on some other things that are not so efficient, some of which may have to do with overhead. And all of us, both insurance companies and the government and you as a consumer, we're all going to have to pay more attention to healthcare costs. And we are doing some of that with the Affordable Care Act.
Okay, the next question comes from Amifa Christine Loco. The question is, are there any plans to address the increasing rate of childhood obesity rates in future amendments to the healthcare reform bill?
Well, I don't know about any future amendments to the healthcare reform bill, but I do know that there are provisions in the Affordable Care Act that help with childhood obesity. One of them is the fact that prevention coverage, preventive treatments that have been recognized as being effective have to be covered. And for children, that will include looking at, you know, having a wellness visit where they will look at their weight and make sure that they're getting a consultation with a doctor as part of that. That's something that insurance plans will have to start covering as effective as of in September. And we also know that more children having access to care and having insurance coverage will help them to live healthier lives and to get the preventive treatments that they need. So that helps make a start at this. Wellness programs are also included and are encouraged as part of the Affordable Care Act, and that should help also more people to get help if they have problems with obesity.
Okay, the next question comes from Lori Woodward in Applegate, Oregon. How will the president and the people in Congress preserve the health care law, and what can the average citizen do to preserve it?
Well, the president is working hard to preserve the healthcare law. And as I said yesterday, we published an important regulation that's going to help give consumers more control over their own lives and their own insurance. This summer, we also worked on a number of other provisions, like the Patient's Bill of Rights, that gives consumers more control and says that they don't have unreasonable annual limits, they don't have lifetime limits anymore for their insurance plans. And that there can't be rescissions of policies just because you maybe missed something or made an inadvertent error when you were filling out a form. So all those things are important, and we think that making sure that the American people understand this law and what it would do if the Congress were to repeal it. I mean, some have talked about repealing it. You would lose the protection and the donut hole that seniors have for their prescription drugs. You'd lose the free preventive benefits. You'd lose the protection against an insurance company rescinding your policy just because you made a mistake. You would lose all those things if the Affordable Care Act weren't here anymore. And that's what we're doing, is working to make sure the American people understand that. And we're working with members of Congress about that as well.
Great. This question is a little bit similar. Derek Gibson on Facebook asks, what can we, the citizens of the United States of America, be doing today, tomorrow, and going forward to make healthcare reform successful in our own lives and in our communities?
Well, Derek, one thing you can do, and this relates a little bit to Laurie asked the same thing, which I really appreciate, which is what can we as citizens do to preserve this? And what you can do is understand what's in the law and how it benefits you and your family and people in your community. As I mentioned, the Department of Health and Human Services has a website called healthcare.gov, which is just the facts on what's in the law. It also has a really neat tool where you can find plans in your area and see how much they cost, and just has a whole lot of information that American consumers have never had access to before, and it's only going to get better. So I would urge you to be as educated as you possibly can on what's part of this law, and help us really to implement it. As we put out regulations like the one we put out yesterday, you know, I urge you to look at it, give us any questions you have about it, give us comments, you know, continue to help us make it better.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, go to whitehouse.gov/live. There's a link to a live chat that's happening right now on Facebook, where we have a lot of questions rolling in. So the next question comes from, I'm just trying to pull it up, Vanessa Rivera Sosa, who asks, why doesn't the new healthcare policy cover dental, especially for the younger citizens, since many dental issues can result in medical issues down the line?
I believe it does. I believe that the law defines essential benefits, and I believe it does define for pediatrics that dental care is an essential benefit.
And this will actually be our last question for the day. This comes from Georgiana Mims, who's back in the chat. She asks, isn't there a tort reform model projects in healthcare reform?
Yes, there is. The president last year, before healthcare reform was even enacted, said, you know, I want to really make sure we understand what works and what doesn't in terms of tort reform, in terms of reducing unnecessary litigation. He doesn't want to do anything that would hinder the rights of people who have been harmed by the medical system to get redress for their harms. But at the same time, he knows that a number of physicians feel like they practice defensive medicine or do things that they probably wouldn't do if they weren't afraid of being sued. So he wants to get at what would help make that better. And the Department of Health and Human Services awarded grants of $25 million in the last few months to a number of communities around the country to explore some innovative ways of figuring out alternatives to litigation and going to the courthouse. And they're in the middle of doing those demonstrations right now, and we hope to have some results soon.
Okay, Vanessa actually just chimed in. She said the question was actually directed more to the coverage of 20-somethings that are beyond the pediatric care.
Yeah, and I don't know the reason why that was not included, but I do know that for younger children under the age of, I think, 18 or 19, it is defined as an essential benefit. And this is something that could change over time, but for now, I don't believe it's in there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Nancy Ann, for joining us. Thank you for everyone at home that was participating in the chat and that sent in your questions in advance. This video will be posted shortly, so if you missed any of it, you can catch it all in the next day or so. And we look forward to seeing you next Tuesday.